there. I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Rosie Knight.
And this is The Sauce, the pop culture podcast where we drink Bloody Marys and ruin the stuff you love.
Amazing. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, we have so much to talk about today. It's super exciting. We're going to share some listener feedback and respond to it. And then we are going to talk about this play at the Public Theater, Shakespeare in the Park, that has roiled up some controversy. And then we're going to touch on a new comic that has also caused some controversy, and we have a lot to say about. That's called Divided States of Hysteria from Image Comics. I know, it's such a great title. I mean, how could you go wrong with such a good start? We have a few words to say about the passing of Adam West, and then we're going to talk about some stuff we're really excited about. Spoiler alert, it's Black Panther. So before we do all of that, let's talk about what we're drinking. What do you have in your cup today, Rosie?
I finally have a Bloody Mary.
You do?
I do. It's very basic. It's just vodka, tomato juice, celery salt, and hot sauce. But it's a Bloody Mary.
All right. Those are some key ingredients. And I'm so proud of you for finally following through on the promise of our tagline and having a Bloody Mary. I, too, have a Bloody Mary. Mine's from a mix, which is something I've never done before. I never did. The only time I've ever had a Bloody Mary mix, I think, is on the ferry to Catalina, because that's the only thing they have for Bloody Marys. And they take, like, Mrs. T's, but they, like, dress it up for you. They put a little extra salt and pepper in it. It's actually not bad the way they do it. So this one that I have, though, it's called Lefty O'Doul's Bloody Mary Mix. I bought it because it's local. It says on the bottle, it's a San Francisco original. So it has a baseball theme. Lefty O'Doul is, I think, a baseball player. Sounds like it. I don't know. I don't follow baseball. I don't like baseball. Sorry. But I'm quite enjoying it. It's got a little hint of horseradish, and it's very Worcestershire-y.
Oh, so yeah.
It's cool. It's a little sweet, but it's good. So, Rosie, did you watch anything or read anything that you'd like to talk about since last recorded?
I did. In fact, today I watched a very cool documentary called Elstree 1976, and it was basically a documentary about extras who are in Star Wars.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, just, like, focused on, like, how these people who had these kind of, like, non-entity roles, or that should have been non-entity roles, have become these, like, cult heroes in their own right. And it also had David Prowse, who was Darth Vader, who obviously wasn't a small character, but he's, like, got a bad history with Lucasfilm, and...
So
he played Darth Vader, but he didn't do the voice. Obviously, James L. Jones did the voice. And basically, he was one of the few characters, like, who didn't from the main cast, who didn't get royalties because of, like, a clause in his contract. So he only got paid his original fee.
That sucks.
Yeah, and there was, like, a lot of kind of weird, messed up stuff that happened with him and, like, Lucasfilm. And then, like, he got banned from, like, official Star Wars celebration and stuff, because I think, like, he just was, like, complaining too much about George Lucas.
That's so sad.
Yeah, I hope that would change, because, like, Disney's in charge now. But no, it was a really cute, sweet documentary about, like, all these different characters, from, like, some random stormtrooper to, like, this guy who was meant to have a character that got cut, but he ended up playing the sand trooper who says, these are not the droids you're looking for, you know?
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah.
That sounds like something I would really enjoy. It's called Elstree 1976.
And it's on Netflix at the moment.
Oh, cool. So what did I do? I went to see Roger Waters at Oracle Arena here in Oakland. Yeah, I don't go to a lot of big arena rock shows. I don't think I have since I was maybe 18. but my husband's a huge Pink Floyd fan, so he really wanted to go. It was really fun. I wore my over-the-knee black suede boots.
Amazing.
And I was very uncertain about wearing them. I thought I would look like someone's mom who's trying too hard you know, trying to look like I fit in at the rock concert. But Matt was like, no, they look great. They look hot. You should totally wear that. And then when we got there, everybody there was middle-aged women in their, like, black suede boots and their lace top. They're, like, leather jackets with the fringe. And I was like, oh, my God, these are my people. I fit in perfectly. I've never felt like I fit in so perfectly anywhere. But the show was amazing. It was this whole audio-visual experience. Mm. It was really amazing stagecraft with projected images, and there were laser lights and these screens that came down from the ceiling in the middle of the auditorium. And there was a, during Pigs, there was this big floating pig that came around the audience. Amazing. Yeah. And it had Donald Trump on one side with dollar signs for eyes. And during the song Pigs, oh God, it was just so great. There were these giant screens, like I said, and they were flashing images of Trump, like Trump with a baby's body and Trump with a pig's body and just Trump's face. And it was incredibly cathartic to be in this auditorium with probably 15 or 20,000 people. and seeing Trump on the screen and everybody singing together, like, ha ha, Sherrod, you are. It was amazing. And it wasn't subtle at all, but it was fun. I only wish they had let us throw rocks at the screen. I kind of wish that had been an element to just really follow through. But regardless of the lack of rock throwing, it was just really an enjoyable experience. So we have a couple pieces of listener feedback. One is from Facebook. Evan Hirschman commented and said, in response to our last episode where we talked about bad takes on Wonder Woman, Evan wrote, "The crown jewel of bad Wonder Woman takes just came to my attention." And he linked us to a piece on the American Conservative, is the name of the publication, and the title of the piece is "The Sham Psychology of Wonder Woman."
It sounds amazing.
It sounds amazing. So we look forward to reading that, Evan. We will definitely give it a few minutes, and I am sure laugh heartily. Also on Twitter, we got some question from Dean Madden. That's at Madden Dean on Twitter. He writes, "Forgive me if this is lame, but I've been thinking about Kathy Griffin's quote-unquote art versus Julius Caesar production, ... Dean, that is not lame. I think it's a very interesting comparison, and you're certainly not the first to make it, which we'll talk about momentarily because we're going to jump into some topics. Are you ready to get into some topics?
I am ready to get into those topics.
All right, let's do it. So, speaking of art and Donald Trump and expressing our hatred for him in various ways, just yesterday, we're recording this on Monday, so on Sunday, a controversy erupted because the Public Theater in New York, which is the theater company that does Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park, among many other productions, they're a very, very highly respected theater company, they came under fire. As the New York Times put it, online and in right-leaning media outlets for their current production. On Sunday morning, Fox and Friends reported about it, calling it, quote, "a disgusting New York City play depicting the president brutally assassinated." And they did compare it to the Kathy Griffin thing, where she posed for photos with an apparent bloody Trump's head.
Yeah, blah, blah.
The big punchline of all of that is that the play that they're talking about, the New York City play depicting the president brutally assassinated, is Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
Like, it's, this is a play from like hundreds of years ago. It's not about Trump. It's actually, it's the same reaction that we were talking about on the first episode where people were like, they've written this Handmaid's Tale show because they hate Trump and they want to make him look bad. And it's like, right. This existed before. People like him have existed before. And it's been unbelievable. The response to it is
incredible to me. Yes, it's like a 400-year-old play about events that happened in, what, 44 AD or something?
Yeah, and also as well, like, the whole point of it is that the assassination is, like, bad. Like, it was badly orchestrated. It was a stressful thing to do. It didn't really achieve anything. Like, that is the play of Julius Caesar. Like, just, I'm not even going to say, like, read a book, because I feel like that's often used to, like, disparage people who maybe, like, don't have education or whatever, or can't access it. But, you know, just Wikipedia it. Like,
right, it's just not... Or it's not someone. That difficult. Well, what's funny is if you were to Google it and find the website of the public theater, on the page for the show, they have this long statement from the director of the show where he talks about their rationale for putting it on. And he says all that. He's like, this is not a show that's about how great assassination is. I'm paraphrasing, but he says, this show is about the consequences and how when, if you try to preserve democracy using undemocratic means, it's not going to work out the way you want it to work out. It's in the play. All the people who assassinate Caesar then later get hunted down and killed. And what happens? Democracy, the Republic is destroyed, and Augustus becomes emperor, and it's the end of the Roman Republic. There's no way you could possibly interpret that play as saying that, like, it's good to assassinate a leader, and that also, you should want to, that anything positive can come of it.
Like, what is this new weird thing where Trump is like a king and we can't, like, depict anything bad happening to him, or else, you know, oh, woe is you, like, you're going to get shut down. It's like, it's the wildest. I mean, it makes sense because he's an egomaniac, but, like, to see it being enacted and corporations going along with it and stuff, because obviously that's, like, the next big thing that happened, right?
Right. So the next thing that happened is that, well, first, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted about it. And then sometime after that, sponsors of the public theater started pulling out, including Delta Airlines and Bank of America. And they say it's not about politics. The play crosses the line in graphically depicting the assassination of a president, even though it's not a president. It's Julius Caesar, an historical character who's costumed to look like the president. Obviously, it's not a subtle analogy they're making. They make it very clear that it's supposed to be him. But it is still a 400-year-old play. What I found amusing is on Fox and Friends, Guy Benson was their talking head, some commentator, and he said, if some show depicted Barack Obama as president getting assassinated, there would be a massive outcry.
Oh, guess what? Spoiler alert, there was.
Right? So, yes, there was a play in 2012, a company called The Acting Company, a really well-respected touring theater company based in New York, did a version of Julius Caesar with a black man as Caesar, and, you know, in modern dress, wearing suits and ties, because pretty much all Shakespeare is done that way now anyway, for all you Shakespeare ignoramuses. So, this production had things like protesters carrying Occupy Rome signs.
Yeah.
Get it. And there was a review in the American Conservative, which I think is the same. Yeah. Is that the same outlet that did that interesting Wonder Woman thing we're going to read?
Amazing. Right.
So they had a review of it where they said it was very powerful. They talked about, the reviewer talked about how the guy playing Cassius resembled Eric Cantor, and Casca was clearly cast to look like Mitch McConnell. So there's no question in that person's mind that it was supposed to be Obama and it was supposed to be an allegory for contemporary events. The New York Times called it a forceful, fine-boned revival. None of the sponsors pulled out of that production.
Yeah, and if I'm not incorrect, Delta is still a sponsor of the Acting Company. And they didn't pull out. And you know, it's this wild kind of, it's something that I find that happens quite a lot with conservatives and like the alt-right and these kind of like right-wing extremists. They co-opt activism and activist language and then like use it against people trying to enact like positive social change.
So true.
this is like right-wing call-out culture where like Donald Trump Jr. will be like, this is disgusting. Barron saw it and probably thought it was real, even though no one's seen the play because it's in previews or whatever.
Right.
And then like some huge airline company will be like, well, we can't, you know, Bank of America. Bank of America, who like literally didn't pull money from the Dakota Access Pipeline when people were having their arms broken and treated like jihadi terrorists, supposedly by the private enforcement companies. But you know, yeah, they'll pull it because of this. It's just outrageous.
It's the same old story. The people who rail about political correctness and how horrible it is, but the moment something they perceive to be critical, even just critical, mm-hmm. of Trump, or mostly Trump, but of them, suddenly it's, you got to boycott all the sponsors. It's inappropriate. They need their safe spaces. They've got their own outrage culture. It's just this crazy, complete double standard. And again, I don't even want to call it a double standard, because there's a difference between something that is quote unquote offensive because it's causing harm to people who are already oppressed and marginalized versus something that's talking about what if people assassinated Trump, which is a legitimate question to ask, quite frankly.
Yeah. And also, it's a political allergy. That analogies happen. That's the most, the weirdest thing to me about this, it's like, this isn't even like a radical thing to do. This is like something that people are doing pretty much every year. It's like, let's do Shakespeare, but let's make it modern.
Right.
You know, like, and it's just wild to me that it's still causing such a chaos. And it also, it highlights to me as well how culturally like bankrupt the right are, which is something I truly believe anyway, because they can't even make memes. Like, have you ever seen a right-wing meme? It'll be like a picture of like a skeleton, that skeleton like dead at a desk, and it'll be something like waiting for the Russia proof to come out, and it's like, well, there's already proof of Russian collusion. That's not in question, and also that's not how a meme works.
Their memes are only funny to them. They make these jokes. I mean, this is a whole other topic. We could have a whole
I know, right?
They make these jokes that are only funny to them. Like, for years, anytime there was a conservative hashtag and you'd click on it, half the jokes would be about Obama using a teleprompter. And it's like, that's not a funny joke. Like, first of all, we all know Obama can speak off the cuff incredibly articulately and well without a teleprompter. That's well established. But also, every president has ever used a teleprompter since they were invented. Like, it's not a funny joke. It's not based in truth. But to them, in their little bubble and world, they really gotcha. You know, they really hit you liberals where it hurt. But
They're culturally bankrupt.
The whole thing is preposterous. They don't know the play. They don't give a shit about the play. Even the New York Times review said, quote, even a cursory reading of the play, the kind that many American teenagers give it in high school, is enough to show that it does not advocate assassination. For me, the disturbing part of all this, the actually disturbing part, is the idea that the themes in Julius Caesar are still relevant today. Like, they should not be that relevant.
Oh my god, let's move on, because we did that. That was not exactly 10 minutes.
Perfect. Excellent.
Okay, so we're going into the terrifying world of comics. As we all know, we should be afraid of that. We've all...
It is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it really is. So comics. This month, it's June. It's Pride Month.
That's right.
And Image do Pride covers, where some of the money will go to LGBTQ plus charities. And,
that's nice. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, I think that's the purpose of the Pride covers. But during this month, they've released a just abhorrently awful book by a man called Howard Chaykin, who is supposedly an established comic book creator, but I've been very hard-pressed to find anyone who's read or cared about any of his previous work. Divided States of Hysteria. It's from Image Comics. And
Can we reiterate how terrible that title is?
It's so bad.
Divided States of Hysteria. It
sounds like a Green Day title.
Yeah, it could be. Or I feel like it's even maybe too obvious. I was going to say it could be a Dead Kennedys song title, or maybe album title, but it's almost a little too obvious.
Yeah,
for that.
I think the Dead Kennedys is like they'd have something a tiny bit less like overdone. It's just, it sounds like a Bush era pop punk song.
Yeah, it does.
Just terrible.
So, okay. Tell us what the comic contains.
So the comic is like a general nonsense, kind of like schlock, like, dystopian, but is it that dystopian? But the problem is with it includes the opening pages are just some of the most horrifically, like, violent, transphobic, kind of like a victim porn that I've really seen in a really long time. Horrible. The thing
gets off to a great start because the cover has an image of a woman in a niqab with an American flag on it, which is an interesting sort of play on an image that's really popular right now, which is an illustration of a woman wearing a hijab with American flag on it, to talk about how Muslim Americans are part of American culture and the fabric of American society, and they're just as American as anyone else. And that's a lovely, lovely sentiment. And I feel like he's bastardizing it. He's the niqab,
That's not to do with the fact that the niqab has a negative connotation. It's because you know that someone making a book called Divided States of Hysteria a woman in a niqab with...
You just know the choice to make it the niqab is because of the connotations it has for so many Americans, right? That image of a woman with most of her face covered and only her eyes showing right there is really provocative to a lot of people, and or I should maybe say evocative of a lot of the wrong things. And so you just know, you can just tell from that cover that he's not off to a great start. And then the first two pages you were describing to me, because I haven't seen them.
So it's like, this is trigger warning as well if anyone's listening, but it's just the main character, I assume, she's doing a voiceover in which she uses like some kind of transphobic language. She's a trans woman. And she uses this kind of transphobic language to, like, describe herself, you know, in a this is how people treat me or whatever, which, you know, could be a radical way of representing a trans woman. But maybe if a trans creator was doing it. And anyway, the page shows her basically being she's a sex worker, and she's sexually assaulted by these men who, even though they knew that she was trans, when they're actually faced with the fact she's trans in real life, they decide they're going to like sexually assault and beat her up. And it's very violent and very sort of awful. And then she kills them, which is, you know, the one cathartic part of it. But it's awful, and it's so schlocky and outdated and just, it's so exploitative. Like, he's not trying to make any good statement about whether trans people are hurt or, you know, damaged or it have like oppressed by society, because we know that they are. Trans women are killed regularly. Like, that is not something, he's not exposing anything there. He's using people's trauma as a plot point.
Yeah, he's using it as an attention grabber. It's the opening of the comic, right? So the whole idea is to grab your attention at the beginning and shock you at the beginning with how violent it is. And so we should definitely talk about what some trans people have said about this, because some of our trans friends have commented, and they are the folks who are affected. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, I think one of the first people to mention it was Emma, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, Houxbois. Do you know how to pronounce that name?
I don't know how to pronounce it. But okay. Emma is an amazing comics creator. Was it Comics Alliance? Writes Comics Society Now, when we wrote about comics.
I want to imagine it's Houbois.
Houbois is pretty fantastic, so let's go.
Doesn't that sound amazing?
It does sound amazing.
But she writes, so like, Image just put out a comic with a brutally violent trans panic assault in it a week into Pride Month. Do we need to do this again?
And also, like, it's so depressing. The, like, the resigned kind of nature of, like, do we have to do this again? How many times do we have to do this? Because this stuff just happens so often, that trans people are used as, like, a tool to tell a story, or like the idea of trans people only being victims.
Well, that's the thing, right? There are many ways to portray characters, or many modes of life and paths people can go down. But when it comes to media portrayals, trans women are sex workers who are getting killed. That's like it.
And it's horrific.
Look, that's a real thing. There are trans women who are suffering from violence, that's a real fucking issue, and it's something that needs to be talked about. But it's not the end all be all of the trans experience.
Yeah,
and also, but it's all you see.
What do we really think Chaykin's trying to do, like a hard hitting expose on that? Clearly not.
Right, he's not trying to bring attention to a real serious social issue. It's fucking obvious.
And we'll get to that in a minute, because his response proves that, you know, very clearly.
So we also have Mags V on Twitter.
Mags, who is the creator, does Kim and Kim at Black Mask.
Visaggio? Visaggio? I don't know.
Visaggio, I think.
Again, I don't know how to pronounce it. but Mags tweets, "Can we just fucking not? How fucking hard is it to lay off putting trans women at the center of hate crimes and fiction?" In another tweet, "Nobody deserves to have their primary mode of media portrayal as hate crime victims."
So fucking true, man.
Right? Next tweet, "I spent my whole fucking life thinking this was what was at the other end of transition." And I feel like that just is so powerful and mm-hmm. so important, because it's not just about, you know, representation for the sake of it. It's like trans kids look at comics, you know, they look at television and movies. And when you only portray trans people in this one mode, what else are people supposed to think? Not just cis people who are getting their impression of what trans people are like, which is bad enough, but trans kids who are thinking, if I live my truth and admit who and what I am, then that's what's in store for me. I mean, what a horrifying thing. I can't even imagine.
The irresponsibility is just so wild. And then, like, that's kind of where, you know, the bigger problem, obviously the story itself is a problem, but it got put out by Image Comics. They are the third biggest publisher in comics. They are arguably part of the big three now rather than the big two. You know,
almost,
they're the,
right?
You know, they're the Walking Dead.
They're definitely
Wicked and the Divine,
biggest
their saga.
Biggest name in alternative or smaller press. Oh, did you hear that? That's our alarm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means we have to wrap up, because we're trying not to. How do I make it stop? I don't know how to make it stop. So I really want to figure out how to make it say drink, bitch, instead of making a little chime.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
But we'll have to figure that out. In the meantime, the point here is that Image is a huge name in alternative comics, and one of their strengths is that they do publish a lot of artists who are diverse.
Or trying to tell, like, diverse stories, at least.
Yeah, there's some diverse stories, both in sort of genre and style, and also in who's being depicted in them.
Yeah.
And they have this ethic of artistic freedom where they give a platform to talented creators and say, do your thing. And they don't take a heavy editorial hand at all. And I get that. And that's why we love Image. But I still don't understand this. I can't fucking understand why they would feel this is worth publishing. I mean, it's not just the anti-trans violence at the beginning. You also have later on in the comic a depiction of Muslim women pretending to be pregnant, but
they're suicide bombers.
But they're really suicide bombers, and their bellies have bombs in them. And, like, he thinks that this is edgy. Mags even tweeted it. She writes, "I get it. You're edgy. You're not afraid to show it like it is. Well, fuck your cis white man privileged piece of shit ass." And I agree.
Yeah, me too.
I think this is old fucking news. These white cishet dudes. Nothing wrong with being a white cishet dude, but okay, well, we can have that conversation another time. But this idea of them making these edgy comics where they make people face ideas that they're not comfortable with because they think that that's somehow in itself deep. Provocation for its own sake is not deep.
And
it's not intelligent.
Like, what are these things they want of people to face? They're not like, hey, I'm going to make a comic about, like, the white supremacist patriarchy and how it really fucks up men as well as women and how it fucks up white people. I'm going to talk about how the system that you benefit from is a benefiting from oppression. They don't do things that people are actually uncomfortable about. They just do like bullshit, like here's a horrific thing happening to a marginalized person, and if you can't take it, then you need to get back in your safe space. Like, it's such bullshit.
It's really worthless to me. I don't understand it. What a lot of comic creators seem to think is edgy, I feel like is what seemed edgy when they were 12 and maybe they were reading Frank Miller and they were like, wow, tits and guns. It's so edgy.
Yeah. It's like, and then this woman got raped and now she has like a interesting backstory. Cause otherwise she doesn't like,
now she's killing people violently. It's so edgy and also tits.
Yeah.
And then they grow up and that's what they think is mature and boundary pushing, when in reality it's just old hat. It's been going on forever and there's nothing new about it, and there's no such thing as equal opportunity offending.
No,
because it's not a level playing field to start out with. And I'm very, very tired of the idea that material that people dislike or disagree with, or views that you disagree with, is the exact same thing as material that makes you feel demeaned and marginalized. Those are not the same two things, and I'm tired of them being conflated.
Yeah. Do better, Image.
Now, we're going to talk about Adam West.
Oh, Adam West.
He passed away recently. And we're very sad about it.
Yeah, Adam West is the loveliest. He passed away after, like, I think his family described it as, like, a brief battle with leukemia. Aww. And he was 88, and he was just the loveliest Batman.
I agree. He was certainly the first Batman I knew as a child. And I think that's true for a lot of people. They grew up knowing him as Batman. That was our idea of Batman.
Yeah.
And it was delightful. And every time you hear his Batman show described, people use the word campy. But when you're a kid, it's not campy. It's just fun.
And it's like a comic book.
Yeah.
Like people forget that a lot of Batman is ridiculous. Like, even though at the time it was like a darker comic book or something, a lot of it is still like, here's Batman. He has to wear a rainbow of different suits every night so people don't know it's him. Like, but they're all still bat suits.
Right.
You know, like, it's ridiculous and
has gone through some pretty not dark
periods.
He's gone through some ridiculous and very silly storylines, and there's nothing untrue to the comics about being campy like that. But it was just a delightful show. And of course, he was also very funny. He did voice work for Family Guy. He was very funny, a great sense of humor about himself.
Yeah, he was in the animated series. He played the Batman, the animated series. Yeah, he played a character, I think, called the Grey Ghost. And he's like Batman's Batman.
Oh, and, like, I never knew that.
Yeah, and him and Kevin Conroy got like really close, who was the voice actor on Batman, the animated series. He's so wonderful. He actually, him and they did a Batman 66 cartoon recently that he did the voice for, that was like a movie. And that was really good, like very tongue-in-cheek.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fun. Yeah. I really need to see that.
I love like the kind Batman. Like my favorite thing is like from the movie where like he's got the bomb and he's trying to get rid of it. And it's like a 2-minute sequence and he like won't drop it over the bridge because there's some nuns, and he won't drop it in the pond because there's like some ducks. Right. And it's like this total opposite to like Dark Knight Batman who'll shoot a baby in the head because the baby knows the Joker or something. Like, just like, it's like this like Ben Affleck, I'm going to kill 70 henchmen with an AK-47 attached to a car because, like,
yeah, that
dark cool, and gritty.
Gloomy, gritty thing. Yeah, it's the complete opposite.
He wants to save people and he has, like, shark repellent.
Right, you know? Shark repellent. It's classic. I mean, I love the visuals on that show. I love the colors. I mean, obviously, Adam West is not responsible for that aspect of it specifically, but he met the material where it was at. He was just, he embraced it for what it was. He, you know, danced the Watusi or whatever the heck he was doing when he had to, and gave it his all, and it was delightful and wonderful, and we'll always have that. Yeah. Which is a treasure.
And he was, like, so wild in real life as well. Like, he was a real, like, playboy and stuff. But, like, one of my favorite stories I ever heard about him was like him and Bert, who played Robin, like they got invited to this Hollywood party and they went there and it turned out that it was like an orgy. And so like they just started acting like in character as being Batman and Robin, and they got kicked out.
Of the orgy. Oh my god, I love that,
for being Batman and Robin. And I think that's just like the best Adam West story. We'll miss you so much.
Yeah. Goodbye, Adam West.
Goodbye, Adam West.
Okay, so what are we excited about this week, Rosie?
We are excited about Black Panther.
Black Panther, that trailer that, well, it was like a teaser trailer.
Yeah, it was a teaser trailer, but it was almost 2 minutes long. So I was like so stoked because
it was substantial.
And they dropped it in the basketball, in the trailer break for the basketball. And it was magnificent, really.
It was amazing. It literally had me tearing up.
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted to see a Black Panther movie for my whole life. So, like, it's exciting on that base, like, comic book fan level. But also, like, they've obviously given Ryan Coogler and his team, like, they've given them space to create a vision. Because that is, like, fucking Afrofuturism, like, influenced
most. Dude, and it looked amazing. Wakanda, the whole thing just looked fantastic. I loved it.
It was incredible. Like, and the sequence where, like, it was Black T'Challa and he's, like, standing in front of the wall and it's all these women. And I was like, it's, like, the inversion of, like, the bad guy from Mad Max, you know, standing atop Immortan Joe, and he's, like, standing looking down on all the, like, poor people. It's, like, these really smart, like, visual kind of tropes that they inverted just within this, like, 1 minute, 55-second thing, you know?
Yeah, I hope the movie lives up because there was so much promise in the trailer. It really looked like it was thoughtfully put together.
I was like, all the women. Like, Marvel movies never focus on women, let alone an entire cast of black women.
Black women just looking amazing, looking badass. All these great actresses. Yeah. That I can't wait to see.
Like, incredible. Like, you know, as soon as they said, like, Lupita was going to be in it, that's amazing. You know, Angela Bassett's like one of my all-time heroes, rocking those white dreads, making me think of what Storm could have been, you know.
Totally.
And Coogler is like amazing. And I think one of the best things is that Marvel, like, he had the power. Marvel wanted him enough that he bought like his crew with him of women that work with him. And it is predominantly women. Like, his director of photography is a woman. His production designer and costuming are black women. Like,
And that's, it's so crucial because if you're going to design a fictional African country, I'm sorry. Like,
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see like Kevin Feige Wakanda.
You know? Yeah. You got to get black folks in there. You got to get black women in there. And it seems like they did. I am super excited to see this movie.
Yeah, it looks so cool. And like having the track that they used, like Run the Jewels, seemed really exciting. The people they introduced, like, Michael B. Jordan's like sexy Killmonger. I was like very much here for that. Like,
really good.
Yeah, and like, you know, I thought it was quite funny how they sort of started off with like circus and the Bilbo Baggins and in like the Gollum Bilbo kind of turn. And then at the beginning they open it with these white people.
Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. That was Gollum and Bilbo.
and so like they open it with these two white people, and then like Black Panther basically side-eyes them, and the rest of this is just this incredible futuristic world of Wakanda.
What a great inversion right there, because it's a white guy in chains locked up, and behind the, you know, double-sided glass are black people who are in charge of the situation. Like, I don't know. That just right off the bat, that trailer is like, this is what this is going to be.
I think Ryan Coogler is amazing anyway. Like, and him and Michael B. Jordan do such great stuff. Fruitvale Station is amazing, which is like about a real police killing that happened in real life. And Creed is like incredible. Like, I love Creed. It's my favorite Rocky movie because I don't really like Rocky that much, you know. And I enjoy those movies, but like Creed was like the first one that really emotionally like grabbed me on a level past like, oh, this is a cool movie historically, you know. And I'm very excited to see like what they do together.
Yeah, me too. I haven't seen Creed, but
it's so good. It's on HBO at the moment. You should definitely watch it. It's amazing.
Okay. I can't watch everything, Rosie. It's
too you have many to watch things. Everything.
It's too many things. All right, so we're super looking forward to Black Panther. And we'll just have to keep watching that teaser trailer over and over again. until they give us something more.
We're near the end.
Yes, that's all the topics we had to talk about today. We got through them pretty efficiently, I think.
We actually did. Yeah, this is our best time yet. We're getting very slick for some people who've only had 4 episodes.
Well, I've discovered something late in life, which is that when you do something a lot, you do get better at it.
That's true.
Something I kind of didn't realize till relatively recently, but it's true. So if we keep at this, eventually we'll be good at it.
I know, right?
So we do want to hear from our listeners. We want to hear your thoughts on all the topics that we discussed. Did we get something totally wrong? Or did we miss an important point? We want to hear what you have to say. Yeah. We're also open to questions and ideas, stuff you'd like to hear us talk about. You can reach us by email at saucepodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter at saucepodcast.
Yeah, and you can rate us on iTunes.
That's right. We're on iTunes.
Please rate us on iTunes.
Please rate us. We understand that to be important. And
from what we've heard.
What we've heard. You can review us on iTunes, too. And if you give us an iTunes review, we'll read it and you'll become famous.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We will do that.
With our many listeners, which we don't even know how to find out how many there are.
Somebody's listening, I'm sure.
Somebody's listening. I listen. All right. So until next week, we hope to hear from you via your chosen method of communication. I am at GynoStar on Twitter. That's GynoStar.
And I am at Rosie Marks, RosieMarx. So yeah, see you next time, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.